Hello, everyone. We're here for another edition of Lit Chat. I'm Bonnie, and today I'm here with Raul and Kimberly. And our book for this month was The Wager by David Gran. And now Raul and Kimberly aren't normally in our Lit Chat group, so they did not get a chance to read this book, which in my opinion, they really didn't miss much. It is nonfiction. So if you like nonfiction books, you might have been able to get into this a little bit. It's also maritime, and it's 1800s. No, it was even longer than that. It was like 1800s, mm-hmm. I think
that's just called yonder.
Yeah.
Yonder time.
And it's also English maritime. So we're not even talking American maritime law here. It's basically about this one ship called the Wager that ended up getting shipwrecked. Now, the Wager started out in a group of about, I want to say it was six ships that were being overseen by Captain Anson. But each ship had an individual captain. And as they started, first of all, they couldn't seem to get away from England. It kept being put off and put off. They were after a Spanish galleon that was supposedly full of treasure. That was their mission, to capture the Spanish galleon. And the Spanish galleon was actually over in the Pacific, so they were going to end up having to go down around the Horn of South America to get over to the Pacific. Well, as you know, the seasons are changed mm-hmm. on opposite ends of the world. So they were hoping to get away in time to go around the Horn during summer, and they didn't get there. They ended up going around in the middle of winter, and that is like the worst possible time. Mm-hmm. They could have gone through these little straits. There's all kinds of little islands, and so very narrow channels to get through, and over the course of this trip, several people got sick, died, had scurvy, and died because this was before they knew about, you know, taking citrus and stuff for scurvy. So there was this one guy, Captain Cheap. I always thought that was a funny name. But he wanted so, so badly to be the captain of one of the ships. And as it turned out, with enough attrition, he ended up being the captain of the Wager. So they're now going around the tip of South America, and the Wager has now lost contact with all of the other ships. It is by itself. It got blown off somewhere away from everybody else. They have no idea where everybody else is. And they come up on this little cove, and they are kind of forced into this little cove on the reef, and of course the ship ends up sort of half sinking. But they're on this little island now, mm-hmm. off the southern coast of, I guess it's Chile at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a story of survival and what they did to survive, but it's also, because it was maritime, they still had rules. You know, mm-hmm. you still were supposed to pay attention to your captain. You still were supposed to follow certain protocols. And you had this one group of men who decided... Oh, and you have to remember that the English also conscripted a lot of these people. They basically kidnapped them before they left England in order to get the people on these ships to sail these ships originally. So over half the people on these ships weren't even sailors. They were just people they dragged off the street in England. So, you know, this one group decides, we aren't sailors. We are not going to listen to you. We are going to go off and do our own thing. So they went and found someplace else to live on this island, which ends up getting called Wager for history purposes. They actually named this island Wager Island. Hmm. They kept saying how people were keeping journals. And I had a problem with that because I'm thinking, first of all, how did you keep your journal dry?
Valid point. Yep.
Second of all, what were you writing with? And I'm like, well, if you had fire, you could have used a, you know, a piece of wood, you know, or something. But then in the long run, what were you writing on? You know, like, what material were you using for your journal? And I was like, they never really covered that, those facts. And I was like, so that was a little bit odd to me. But John Byron was one of the people on the wager, and he was the grandfather to the famous poet Lord Byron that we all seem to know about. And you also had another character called John Buckley, who was sort of a jack of all trades on the ship. He didn't really like the way the captain was running things. Captain Cheap was running things on the island. And they were, now, they did manage to get stuff off of the ship. Like, they got to the island, they got some cover set up, and they would send, you know, excursions back with their little, with their, like, longboat to back and forth to the ship, you know, to get flour and stuff that they had there. But, of course, eventually that all ran out. And this island didn't seem to have any wildlife. I mean,
it wasn't sustainable.
It had some plants, but, I mean, you know, it was a very barren, barren island. Now, there were some indigenous people that came by. Now, we're talking middle of winter down there, so the temperatures were, like, freezing, below freezing. And you had these indigenous people that were so used to the area, they were, like, in just their, you know, little, they weren't wearing anything, just their little loincloths and running around in their canoes, you know, with no clothes on. And I'm like, okay, fine. and the English commented on that they couldn't figure out how these people could stand the cold like that. But they were indigenous people, and they somehow rubbed oil on themselves, like, you know, like seals have oil. And so they would take the seal oil and whale oil and rub it all over themselves as kind of the protection, just like the animals would have, which was kind of ingenious. So I was like, okay, fine. But then, of course, you know, the English being English, they couldn't keep their hands off of the women. And so the indigenous people said, you guys can just sit here and rot for all we care. We're going to leave. But they did show them a few things on how to survive. So they did manage that. And then came the time when John Buckley decides he's going to get a group together and mutiny. And he's going to take all the boats that they have, and he's going to head back around the Horn and back up the east coast of South America and see if they can't get back to England. Now, there were so many of them at this point that they were just crammed. I think there was like 200 of them that they crammed into these boats. There were so many people crammed into these four boats that they couldn't even really row. And they have to go through these channels, these horrendous channels again. And so, obviously, people got thrown overboard. People died and everything. And they hit this one point where they sent some guys to shore to see if they could find some food. And then they took off and left them there.
Wow.
And John Byron, he had left with the mutineers. And after a day or two of being gone, he's like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And sort of they had given the Captain Cheap the option of coming with them, but sort of said, we really don't want you to come with us, and we're just going to leave you stranded here on Wager Island. So they just kind of left him stranded there. But then John Byron says, okay, there was something, there was a tarp. They're out a day and they decided, oh, we want this tarp that we left back on Wager Island. So John Byron and a few other the guys said, okay, we'll take this boat back and we'll get the tarp and bring it back. Well, they never went back. They basically went back to Wager Island to stay with the captain. And in the meantime, John Buckley, they do manage to get maybe 20 people from the 200 that they started out with back around to the East Coast. And then they were, the Spanish collected them, put them in prison for a little while. And then eventually, somehow, they got back to England. And John Buckley, he was kind of a smart dude. He says, before anybody else can tell the story, I'm going to get my story out there so that I look like the good guy and the hero. And so he publishes his story back in England. And of course, everybody thinks, oh, he's such a good, great guy and everything. And in the meantime, Captain Cheap and the people on the island have managed to get friendly with the indigenous people again. Mm-hmm. And they sort of managed at some point. Now, Buckley and them got back to England, and then it was like another 2 or 3 years later, wow, here comes Cheap and the other guys showing up. And 4 years into this mission that Captain Anson started, he continued on with his ship. He didn't know where any of his other ships were, but he had one ship left, mm-hmm, that he went and he hunted down that Spanish galleon and managed to capture it, mm-hmm, and get the treasure. And he goes back to England now a super duper hero because now he's got the Spanish treasure, only to find out that all of this has been going on while he's been gone. Now they make him an admiral at this point. So now they've got to figure out what went wrong, who's at fault, you know, because there are very strict rules about mutinying and losing a ship and all of this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And eventually Buckley ends up just taking off and going to America because he doesn't want to be hanged for being a mutineer. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of leave you sort of hanging at the end with what happens to everybody. So I was just like, okay, fine. That was pretty much the story of The Wager. And I'm like, I really wasn't that thrilled. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those books you kind of have to slog through. Mm-hmm. So I was like,
thanks for taking one for the team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to end up talking about it when we actually talk about it next week at our in-person lit chat. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what everybody else thinks about it, too. Even with all of the stuff that was going on, they had one black guy was in the ships with them. And he was a free man. But when he went with the mutineers and when the Spanish captured them, they made him a slave again.
Oh.
And sent him back off to be a slave. So he never got back to England. Mm. You know, so you still had all of this class structure and segregation and racial stuff going on, even though you're out in the middle of nowhere with a wrecked ship. I mean, you're just like, I'm like, okay, fine. You guys can't even get along when you're on a when you're on an island, you know. It's just, So yeah, that was the basic story and what I thought about it. And now, John Byron obviously did make it back to England, you know, mm-hmm, because he ended up having grandkids. So, but that was just a.
Whose perspective was this whole story?
This story was taken from all the different journals that people had written. John Byron apparently kept a very meticulous journal. Buckley did. Captain Cheap obviously kept records for the ship's log. Mm-hmm. Captain Anson obviously had his records, you know, from his ship and taking over the Spanish galleon and all that kind of stuff. And there were other in-person accounts when they got back to England and, of course, the court records and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But it was mainly taken from the journals that the people had written, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, they had some pretty meticulous journals. But, like I said, I'm never sure what they ended up writing on. And there was some instances of cannibalism. And, of course, when you get back to England with that, that's another hanging offense, you know. Yeah. So they had to be really careful about what they said about the things that went on the island.
Who told about the cannibalism?
It was in their journals.
Oh.
They would write about it in their journals.
Man, that's rough.
When things happened. So, enough of that one. We'll discuss that at the Lit Chat next week and see what everybody else thinks about it.
Sounds like it might have been interesting if it were just... If what was the biggest issue making it a slog?
It was just a slow go. It wasn't written as an adventure, mm-hmm, which obviously it wasn't for the guys who were doing it at the time, probably. Which if they had written it more as an adventure type thing, it might have had a little more. But they were I mean, it was just, this is what, it was very factual. I think it needed to be more story-ish to make it an easier read. It was just like stating one fact after another after another, like reading your social studies book in high school, you know. It's
just, I really liked my social studies book in high school.
I guess it needed some editing.
Yeah, probably. And of course, this one will probably end up being a movie too, because, you know, they did the Killers of the Flower Moon, which That's is by right. the same guy. And I think there's already the rights and stuff out there to make this one a movie.
That was a wild story. I did not realize until I watched the movie that was a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
Well, we did the Killers of the Flower Moon several years ago. Well, when that book came out.
Mm-hmm.
Lit Jack, probably when it was called Lunch and Lit. And I actually liked that book. So I thought, well, you know, I wrote another one.
I only watched the movie.
Yeah.
Because I was stuck at home. I had COVID, so that gave me 3 hours of entertainment.
There you go.
I haven't seen it yet. I've been meaning to.
Yeah. I'm not a big movie person, so I'll probably never see it. I shouldn't say never. Maybe one of these days it'll come up somewhere and I'll watch it. But
it was very violent. I'll give it that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the book was very violent.
I imagine it was.
It was, from what I have heard of the movie and the book, that it followed the book very closely.
Well, that's always nice to know.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse than a movie that was made off a book and all they did was keep the names.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh,
that gets really bad.
The worst.
So, Kimberly, what have you been reading? We'll talk about some of our reads since, you know, we're done with The Wager now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I work with teens here. And next week is also the Teen Book Club. It's actually right after Lit Chat, a couple hours later. I'm the kind of person who is just naturally going to hate any assigned reading, so I would have hated The Wager regardless, because I don't like assigned reading. So for teens, I do kind of a free read. I just give them genres to pick from.
Okay.
And so this month, our theme is science fiction or fantasy.
Okay.
Kind of goes hand in hand, which, of course, I don't love science fiction. So I picked somewhat of a fantasy. It's Cinder and Glass, written by Melissa de la Cruz. It's a retelling of Cinderella in a non-magical way of telling the story. It's a historical fiction, you could say, because there is no magic or, you know, fairy godmother, mm-hmm. but all those characters are represented. So this girl, Cinderon, it's really hard to say. I think it's supposed to be a French name. Is going to court because she has now come of age to go to court. And they're about the same time that two princes are coming of age to be married. One of them is a legitimate prince. And the other one is a half. He's the child of an affair.
Mm-hmm.
So he is not a legitimate prince. And in the meantime, I'm just going to call her Cinder because it's easier to say. Cinder meets him when she goes to court, but doesn't realize who he is because she's brand new. She doesn't know the drama yet.
Okay.
And so her dad meets the lady who is going, he's going to marry. It's going to be her evil stepmom. That's who it ends up being. And she has two daughters. One of them is truly terrible. And the other one's not as terrible. She just kind of goes with the flow with what's going on.
Well, that's kind of with the Disney version.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like that.
You had the really mean one, and then you had the one that just kind of went along with everybody that kind of thought they were being nice, but, you know, she couldn't say anything.
They did that with the Drew Barrymore version of it.
Mm. Right.
It came out in the late 90s, Ever After, I think is what it was called.
I remember that one.
Yeah. So it's a lot like that. And the dad had a best friend who was the godmother of Cinderella, Cinder. Of course, dad dies, and the godmother's not to be found because she was heartbroken. She actually really liked the dad.
Mm-hmm.
And evil stepmom makes Cinder do the housework and pulls her out of court, and a year passes. And now the princes, the older prince, the one who's legitimate, is of age to marry. And they deny her ability to go to the ball. And it just so happens that godmother shows up, sees what's happening, and dresses her up and takes her to the ball. And if you've read any of the Kira Cass books, there's a whole series of them. It's almost like a futuristic bachelor thing. And they kind of do that here as well. They're having the ball to try to get people to interest the prince. And then there's like a contest at the end, you know, to see who's going to marry. And it goes on for a number of days. Of course, he picks Cinder. The stepfamily's horrified, of course. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the godmother dies from tuberculosis.
Wow.
So now she really has nobody left. So it just kind of follows the general story of Cinderella without the magic in there. And it does end on a happy note. I won't give away the end.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really good. There's so far two books in the series. The next one is a retelling of Snow White. Okay. It has a lot of people getting poisoned. So it's Snow and Poison is the name.
Uh-huh.
And okay. There's a lot mm-hmm. of poisoning and going to witches to get the poison not done. And instead of the seven dwarves, it's seven little boys living in the woods.
Oh, so
it's
okay.
like, it's okay. kind of... You know, a yeah. retelling that's not magical, but mm-hmm. all the poisoning, it's kind of ridiculous. It yeah, gets a little well. Old at the end. I'm just like, really? How much poison are we going to do? This is ridiculous. Quit poisoning people.
Yeah.
So that's what I read. I really liked the first one. I couldn't put it down. Actually, I've read it twice. So that's what I'm going to be doing for Teen Book Club on Thursday.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I'm in the middle of reading a mystery book, also a young adult book. It's called The Ghost Hunter Adventure Club by Dr. Cecil H.H. Mills. And curiously enough, this is a book made by an influencer, a YouTuber called Aaron Hansen. And it's a sort of pastiche on the Hardy Boys. And okay. It is a complete comedy. It is so funny. Like, I won't spoil it, but somebody's head does explode in the first two issues, and now they have to find out why and how this happened. But every other line is like a gag, and they sort of have to team up with one of the staff members to solve this mystery.
Okay.
And throughout the whole book, I'm only halfway through, it's sort of like it doesn't take itself seriously. So on the plus side, it's a really comical book, and I really enjoy it. There are a lot of little fun gags, but there's, like, not a whole lot of suspense. It's not, like, an actual mystery. They're short of looking for a treasure as well. It splits off into a lot of corners, but I'm enjoying it for the most part. I can't really say too much about it because I haven't finished it. But it's, like, the marketing is what I really want to talk about because it's being marketed under a pseudonym. You know who the real author is. It's Aaron Hansen. But it's being marketed as a character, so nobody's really sure if he actually wrote the book himself. Or he's like using his own name as sort of a marketing tool.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like, did he have a ghostwriter? Did somebody else write this book? Lord. So we're still trying to figure that out myself.
Or is he just trying to get more money?
That's probably what it is.
But hey, you know, have you read anything else?
I've actually started another book. I've also started the second book in the Alex Cross novels.
Okay.
Kiss the Girls.
Right.
And I find it a bit unsettling just how in detail he gets into, like, the murders and the crimes itself. Alex Cross is, of course, as charming as he ever is. Right. He's on top of everything.
My husband was reading a newer book by Patterson,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me, you might actually enjoy this when it doesn't have as much blood and guts in it. Mm-hmm. I was like, because Patterson does have a tendency to get very, very detailed with his murders. So, if you like that kind of thing, or can put up with that kind of thing to get the story, that's...
I think I appreciate the detail, but it sort of embellishes the point where you're like, I get it.
Yeah,
we best don't of need is it. Happening.
Yeah, we don't need it. We don't need the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did read a book for the Tournament of Books. This was back in November, but I thought it was the best book out of the Tournament of Books. It's a Throwback by Maureen Goo. And it's imagine the Back to the Future story, right. but happening now. So it's a teen girl who goes back in time inadvertently and makes friends with her mother when her mother was the same age.
Well, that could be interesting.
It was really interesting. And it so that she goes back to the 90s.
Back to the 90s.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. And she has to complete a mission to be allowed to come back into our time. And if she fails, she's just stuck in the 90s forever.
Yeah. Well, that could be bad.
It was actually really, really good. It was a great story.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that. And that was for the Tournament of Books. But the other things I've been reading lately are kid books for the kids' book club, Between the Pages, which is all graphic novels. So
okay.
I'm excited for what we're doing this summer. That's all I can say.
Oh.
Okay. I'm so excited. We're doing Escape at 10,000 Feet, which is the story of D.B. Cooper, which is a true story, a true crime story. And I picked it because it's a graphic novel, and it's a fascinating story because nobody got hurt. There was a hijacking of an aircraft in the 70s, and nobody got hurt. He let everybody go. He got the money, but did he get away with it? Because we don't know if he lived or died. That's the truth. That's the very short version of it.
Yes, I've heard of that one.
That just fascinates me.
Okay.
And they've recently said some new stuff, new theories about D.B. Cooper, so maybe we'll have more information by the time summer comes around. So I'm super excited about that book.
Okay.
Very interesting. Well,
I've been reading a lot of my general authors that I keep up with. Clive Cussler. Of course, he's not writing the books anymore.
Mm.
But now they're Clive Cusslers, whatever. I like them because they're adventure novels, but they always have this little bit of history in them. Whichever series it is, it seems like it's always either the Russians or the Chinese that are trying to do something to take over the world.
Shocker!
And Clive Cussler's characters have to stop whatever is going on in order to save the world. And, of course, they always manage to. But I like them because of some of the stuff that he does. And in one of them, they call it Fast Ice. And he starts out with this history. He always starts out with a little history thing that happened somewhere, that's supposedly a true thing that happened back in history. And then he takes you to his fiction side of it. But back in 1941, there was a Nazi expedition to Antarctica. And they found this algae under the ice that could cause instant freeze. And unfortunately, they didn't get away to bring it back. But then over the years, somebody else was working on this same type of thing. And now you've got this group of, I think now the Chinese are involved in it. And they literally want this, actually, it's this one guy who wants to take over the world. Because there's only one place, if you let this algae into the ocean, water triggers it. So if you let this algae into the ocean, the only place that it's not going to freeze is right along the equator. So this guy is like buying up all these properties on the equator. He's got some place to live. And then he's got his partners in crime in China and Russia and all these other places who are going to deploy this algae. And of course, they have to stop it. And, you know, they usually manage to. And he also does at the end of his book some of these true false things. There is an algae out there that will do this, that will freeze. Mm. So there is actually scientific experiments and stuff being taken on about this particular type of algae and what it is actually capable of. So I've read that one. I read another one by him, but, you know, they're basically, like I said, they're all basically the same thing. They, you know, have your big world powers, and they got to save the world. But I like them.
I guess you can say that book was cool.
Oh. Actually, I was thinking of the practical applications of having freezing algae. Could I, like, keep it in my car so I don't have to run the air conditioning this summer? in case we have a ridiculous summer again.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. Who knows?
Can we just, could they sell this algae and we could just use that instead of blocks of ice? Might keep library a little cooler in the summer.
For sure.
There you go.
It's just practical thoughts is all I'm thinking about.
Yeah. And then I read one of my J.D. Robb books, her latest book, Random in Death. And J.D. Robb, I like her because it's slightly futuristic. Her stories take place in 2050s and 60s, you know, the 2050s and 60s. So it's not that far in the future. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that she has in her books, the technology and stuff, isn't far-fetched. But it's kind of stuff that you hear about, like they do have flying cars and stuff like that, and drying tubes. Like when you take your shower, you just step in a drying tube instead of having a towel, you know. But she also deals with current events a lot, you know, like what is actually happening out there. And in this particular one, it's called Random in Death because you have this teenager who is not quite right, but he's a genius. And his dad runs a pharmaceutical company, so that plays into it. And he has access to all this stuff, but he is smart enough that he has managed to develop a serum that he can inject in somebody and they will be dead in less than a minute.
Wow.
And he has this thing against girls because they ignore him. You know, he's not very good looking. He's not popular. So he goes to like these teenage events, you know, these big venue type events. Like there was one that there was this music group that was playing that they taken over this one bar that normally is adult, but they change it to a teen night with all of the liquor locked up and everything so the teens can come in and see this band. And he comes in and he just picks somebody at random and sticks his little stuff in them. And the thing is, he doesn't even stay around to watch them die. You know, usually your murderers stay around because they want to see, you know, what happens. He doesn't even do that. He just does it and leaves. And so the whole story is about how to find this guy and what they go through to find him. Like, one of the things that helps find him is his shoes. Because apparently, because he is not popular and because he's this intellectual type, he does not understand the fashion of teenagers. So he thinks he understands, so he goes to one of the stores that sells knockoff stuff. And so this is what the people remember about him, that he was wearing these, he was wearing the cheap stuff, he wasn't wearing the actual stuff. And that's kind of how they kind of end up finding him, because they go to this store and the girl in the store, the salesperson, says, yeah, I thought it was kind of weird that this guy is wearing $1,000, you know, shoes, these fancy leather shoes, to come in here to do his shopping. So, you know, they kind of use that, you know, to find out where this guy buys his stuff. And it was just really, but just the whole thought of just somebody going out there and randomly, literally, randomly killing someone. He had no connection to any of his victims. Nothing. He would go out there, and if one of them looked at him wrong in the crowd, he just decided, okay, that's the one I'm going to do. And it was kind of a scary idea that there could be somebody that smart out there, that difficult to find, you know, that you just have no idea. And what could happen if his formula got into the really wrong hands, you know, as a biological weapon. And you're just like, ah. But she does a really, really good job with, you know, bringing, you know, things like that to light, you know, to sort of make people think about them.
Yeah.
But, you know, they always get their guy in the end, too. So they always find the bad guy and get him in the end. So that's always a good thing.
They have to, otherwise there's no series.
Yeah, well, this is true.
Actually, that kind of goes back to something I was just telling somebody about yesterday. When I was a teenager, this new kid came to our youth group, and he proclaimed, in the first time we met him that he was a genius, but he had no friends. He said, I made the perfect score on the SAT, but I have no friends. And I felt bad for him, so I began to communicate with him on AOL Instant Messenger. That definitely ages me. And he, at some point, indicated that he liked me, and I legitimately just wanted to be his friend. I was trying to be nice, and he threatened to kill me for that.
Oh.
So that feels very much like that. I was like, I was genuinely just trying to be a nice person. And I ran into him a couple of years later on accident. I was sitting in my car at the mall waiting on somebody to come in, and he pulled into the parking spot across from me. And I threw myself in the back seats. I was still scared to death of the guy. Don't know whatever happened to him, but I hope he's not making poisons for
me. I hope not, too. Yep. That's all we have for today. This is Bonnie, and we'll say goodbye.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Toodaloo.